Ladies and gents, your host, Ryan Helms here. I just wanted to take a quick second to welcome all of our new listeners. The podcast is really picking up some steam lately, and I couldn't be happier to have all of you new listeners tuning in. If you're new, be sure to go subscribe to the podcast so you get the latest episodes when they come out. Other than that, if you haven't already, go pick up a free copy of the PDF of the Side Hustle Journal over on my website, grittandhustle.co. You can get a free copy there and get started building your side hustle today. Now, on to the normal intro.
And so at some point, our light at the end of the tunnel, or our goal, was to take a sabbatical, I guess. You know, we're going to kind of quit the jobs and load into our van, which at the time was an old split window 67 Volkswagen, and just drive south and, you know, hang out in Mexico for...
What is up, my fellow side hustlers? This is your friend and host, Ryan Helms. I want to welcome you to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. I'm part of a small minority that are taking action because we just aren't satisfied with waking up, going to a 9-to-5 job, then coming home only to repeat it again the next day and never make any real progress in life. We're here to create our own path, our own happiness, our own freedom, and we refuse to be just another cog in the machine. Because we have busy lives and limited resources, we can't just throw stuff against the wall and hope that something sticks. We have to play smart and move forward each day with consistent focus and deliberate effort while using only today's best tactics and most efficient tools. We aren't going to sit back and hope for a 3% raise each year. We are building additional income sources that will allow us to create the life we want. We call ourselves Freedom Chasers. And this podcast highlights the journeys of these everyday people who are creating extraordinary side hustles. Welcome to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. In this episode, I'm chatting with Brian and Jen Danger about how they sold a lot of their belongings and packed up the rest into an old 1967 Volkswagen van to drive south towards Mexico for 18 months. We go into how this trip coming to an end was the start of something else. Their business Zenbox, where they designed small living spaces, and Zen Vans, where they designed the interiors of vans to make them livable. So, let's not waste any more time and dive into this episode now.
We are Brian and Jen Danger.
And we're talking to you from Portland today. Portland's kind of our home base, but it's probably fair to say that we're mostly, if not entirely, nomadic at this point. I don't know, man. What do you want to know? We're absolutely transparent, so feel free to ask.
Yeah, us. So let's start with the word nomadic. What does that mean to you?
Nomadic to us means that we don't live in one home. We have a van and we travel around. We stay wherever we want for however long we want. We do have a home in Portland. We rent it, but we have the option to hang out in Portland as much as we want because we have our tribe here. We have some people here that we adore. We also have friends all over in California, in British Columbia, in Colorado. So we sometimes, you know, have our detached bedroom outside their place. Other than that, Brian and I just ask each other in the morning, are we happy here? Do we want to go somewhere tomorrow? Do we want to stay? Do we want to move? Do we want to explore a new place? Do we want to go back to somewhere we've been?
That is awesome. So much I want to dive into there. But first, I'd love to take a huge step back and ask, did you guys ever live a quote unquote normal life? So have a 9-to-5 job, live in one place, not travel around in a van. Like, were you ever there?
For sure. For far too long, actually. yeah, we both had, you know, corporate, I'd say 9 to 5, but we both seem to work closer to 60, 80 hour weeks, I think. Mm-hmm. And I used to travel a ton. So I'd be gone, you know, 25 days a month or more. And so we, you know, we had decent, good paying jobs that, you know, I think most people would be happy to have. And we felt like we should be happy to have them, but we just never felt like we were doing the right thing or that we were really listening to ourselves. And so at some point, you know, Jen for years said, oh, let's just quit our jobs and run away. And that never quite fit for me without some type of a plan or some type of a destination, I guess. Mm-hmm. So we kind of finally, once I was sold, you know, set our minds to it, dramatically downsized, paid off all the debt that we could, saved enough money. And kind of our light at the end of the tunnel or our goal was to take, you know, what at the time we thought was just a sabbatical, I guess. You know, we're going to kind of quit the jobs and load into our van, which at the time was an old split window 67 Volkswagen, and just drive south and, you know, hang out in Mexico for, you know, we thought we had saved enough money for maybe a year and a half, 2 years on the road. Mm-hmm. And that was just past 6 years ago.
6 years and 2 weeks.
So, Brian, what sold you on this? You said, you know, she was, Jen was kind of kicking around the idea for a while, then you were sold on it. Was there any particular moment that sold you?
Sadly, I mean, I always loved the idea, just to be clear. I mean, obviously, the idea is fantastic. I was just horrified of, you know, the what ifs, you know, what about the 401k? What about the plan? What about our mortgage? People don't just quit and run away. You know, it was also, you know, this was right around the economy busting. And so we had a lot of friends that were actually losing jobs and couldn't find other ones. And, you know, it was just, it was a tough thing for my logical brain to sign up for. But yeah, one day I literally went in for a routine checkup and the doctor was like, anybody ever tell you you have horrifically high blood pressure? You know, we can't tell from one test, but you should be on medication immediately. And that was just kind of enough of an aha or a heads up to me that I went home and said, okay, let's do this. You know, let's not go today, but let's set a plan and a timeline in place to make it happen.
So was this like a wake up call from the like life is short standpoint? And this, like, what was it about the high blood pressure?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was just one of those, you know, what are we really fighting for here? You know, I mean, if we're working every night and day to try and save money for some eventual retirement that we might not make it to, what's the use?
So how long did that preparation phase take from when you guys decided, you both shook hands and agreed like, hey, this is what we're doing. You said you had to pay off some debt. You had to get things set financially. Like what did that look like as far as a timeline from agreement to, okay, let's pack up the old VW van and head south?
I'm going to guess it was 3 or 4 years. I actually don't know, quite honestly. You know, and we had been doing some of that before, right? Like we at some point had already had some of the realizations, you know, where we started doing spreadsheets or pie charts and realizing exactly, you know, we end up with $0 at the end of every year. Where's it going? And so we had started trying to get rid of some debt and things before that even happened. But then we definitely kind of put the pedal to the floor in terms of focus.
Mm-hmm. So you said you did like downsizing and things like that. Does that mean you sold off a bunch of your stuff and moved into like a smaller house or smaller apartment or something like that?
Yeah, so it sort of happened naturally. We didn't purposefully do it, but we lived in a 5-bedroom, 2,000 square foot house, and every room was full, including the garage and the basement
and the attic.
And yeah, and we, you know, we were already starting to think, you know, let's, you know, make a change. And my company ended up moving, and we went with it. We moved with the company for a short while, and we moved into like a 3-bedroom apartment. So we had to get rid of a lot of stuff. That was sort of the first phase. And then after that 3-bedroom apartment, we moved into a 2-bedroom apartment. And then after that, we moved into a studio apartment. And so it was like just over time, we just kept purging, getting a little bit more minimalist in what we owned, what we needed. You know, we went from a 5-bedroom to a studio over the course of a couple of years.
And I think it's, you know, we get a lot of emails and calls and talk with a lot of people. Yeah, I want to be a minimalist. How do I purge everything? And I think if you approach anything in that type of a process where you want to go from 0 to 100, failure's highly likely, if not imminent. But for us, it was just, you know, we ended up in a 3-bedroom. Like, wow, that actually is even more comfortable than what we had in the 5-bedroom, and just kind of kept moving down that road. And then eventually we became almost obsessed by the idea, right, of being pure minimalist, because at some point it just begun to feel very lightweight free. And free to not be hauled, especially as often as we were moving in those years, you know, to have to pack and remove a house, you know, just was treacherous. And so, I don't know, everything just kind of fell into place, and kind of this goal of running away and moving into a van just kind of gave us a light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, because we were also on that path of downsizing, it just, you know, it wasn't, well, how much are we going to put into a storage bin? It was literally, how do we reduce to where that's all we have?
Yeah, I've done something similar, not quite as drastic from a 5-bedroom to a studio, but I've definitely downsized and in a studio now. And I've been in a studio condo for the past 3 years. And then in March, my girlfriend moved in with me, and she thought it would be quite the feat to get all of her stuff in here as well. After several Goodwill trips to donate some things, when she moved in, it actually looked no different than before she moved in, which was amazing for it to be a studio condo. But it's amazing once you get rid of all this stuff, how you never miss it. It never even crosses your mind that you had it ever. It's kind of crazy how we get so attached to consumerism and things like that. So I'm right there with you on just kind of downsizing, minimalizing, and it is a very liberating feeling not to have all this crap hanging around cluttering your life.
Absolutely.
Cool. So when you guys took the trip south, where'd you go?
Well, our intent was just to go to Mexico, and we don't travel anywhere fast. So, you know, we spent months and months even just in Baja, and then finally made it into Mexico, and, you know, eventually drifted south through all of Central America as well. Our heart is still in Mexico.
We went to Belize, and then we went back to Mexico, and then we went across Mexico. We went to Guatemala, and then we went to all of those countries, you know, Honduras, Nicaragua,
and then we got
El Salvador.
We got to the tip of Central America and kind of had to make some tough decisions. You know, we talked about shipping the van to South America and continuing the drive, but we're also missing our friend back home. And so then our very dear friends actually had their first child, and we met the child, second child actually, and met the child via Skype and literally bawled for a day and realized it was time to go home because we, you know, we'd been gone for so long. We actually were just, that's what we wanted more than anything else. And so we were, you know, sitting on beaches every day and having a blast, but it turns out what we really wanted was to have a little time at home. So we parked the van and bought flights home.
How long was this trip from home base down to the tip of Central America?
It was about a year and 2 months, I believe.
Yeah. Somewhere between a year and a year and a half. And then we came home and, you know, we thought we were just going to come throw a couple of hugs, be here for, you know, a couple of weeks. But then we were having a great time and we're falling in love with Portland again and, you know, realized that Portland's not where we were running away from. It was the jobs that we hated that we're running away from. And so it was awesome to be here, but we were mostly, you know, we ended up renting an apartment a couple blocks from our house, which is odd.
Is that because you were renting your house out? Is that what you said?
Yeah, the house was still rented while we were gone, you know, the whole time we were gone. And so we came back and, you know, we didn't even know we wanted to be here yet, so we weren't going to kick them out. We knew we couldn't afford the mortgage, so we didn't want to do that. So we rented a small studio, and, you know, the only thing we had in it was a couple of camp chairs and inflatable mattress that we borrowed from friends. And so it just, you know, we were where we wanted to be, but it was still very strange. And at some point, it hit us that our garage was going unused. The tenants weren't using it. We weren't using it. And so we had this kind of epiphany to convert our 460 square foot garage into a home base for us that we could kind of live in when we came back to town.
Is this and attached to the house?
It is an attached garage. And in the beginning, you know, for us, it was just going to be, okay, we'll just pull the van in and we'll put a sink and a toilet in the corner, you know, and kind of live the way we had been living on the road. But at some point, the designer in me took over and we, you know, went to the city to ask about permits, and they're like, oh yeah, not only can you do it, but it's actually free right now because, you know, we're going through a bit of a housing crisis in Portland. And so every residential lot is actually allowed to have a second dwelling on site. And so it's called an accessory dwelling unit. And our garage basically became just that, a second legal residence that's attached to the house itself.
And so you guys retrofitted the garage. How, I imagine that was no easy feat. So you said you had a design background. Is that what you were doing in the corporate world, was design?
No, oddly. My entire education was in design and architecture.
Gotcha.
But I, at some point, you know, realized the field was not for me. The field wasn't really as creative as what I was after. And so had a huge amount of student loan debt and ended up taking a corporate job that I swore I would only be in for 2 years. And when we ran away, that was 14 years later.
Cool. So what was the first thing you guys did to the garage? Like, what'd you have to do to get it from just having the idea of, okay, I'm going to pull the van into it and we'll put a sink and a toilet in the corner to making it like a livable place? Cause I was looking on watching some videos and things online. It's not just a van in the living room with a toilet in the corner anymore. So how'd you guys get from that idea to this kind of, you know, for a garage, kind of an elaborate garage?
I think we started thinking longer term, like, what if this is our home base forever? And we just continue to travel, come back here, continue to travel, come back here. We want to be able to entertain. We want to be able to cook, you know, delicious meals. We want to be able to have movie night. We want to be able to store all of our, you know, non-season gear. I think that's probably...
And at some point, it became very clear that, you know, once the designer in me took over and we started down this path, it was actually a choice that instead of, you know, again, we'd been on the road for almost a year and a half. We'd spent a lot of our money, most of our money, and then we were kind of renting a place in Portland and bleeding really fast, the quicker than it ever did on the road. And so we knew we were spending the last of our remaining savings to do this. And so we kind of took this mindset of, well, what if we end up still living in this thing 40 years from now? What's going to make us happy? And so, you know, and again, we're used to small spaces. And so for us, it almost became, you know, yes, it's a reuse of a garage space, but it really became, you know, how do we design our perfect home that happens to only be 460 square feet and attached to another house, right?
Mm-hmm. And at some point during this, you guys started a little business, Zenbox Design. What is it, and how did you come up with an idea to do this?
Well, we certainly didn't intend to. You know, we built our garage, and if anyone listening, if you go online and check out the garage, it's different. You know, we have one full wall of glass, a ton of, you know, I was also teaching myself to weld and make furniture at the time. And so we literally built everything inside this garage by hand. And so when you walk by at night and the inside is kind of glowing, people mistake it for a restaurant or a bar or something else that popped up.
And our four friends are over for dinner.
And so we found ourselves in a lot of conversations. And again, you know, in this time in Portland, and it's still going on, a lot of people were kind of intrigued by this idea of how you could, you know, add housing stock for the city as well as, you know, provide kind of a mortgage offset or, you know, a helper income out of something you already own. And so we found ourselves having these conversations, inviting people in for wine to discuss. And then suddenly I'm helping them design theirs for free. You know, it's just neighbors and friends. And, you know, we ended up doing several of these projects. And at some point along the way, Jen pointed out that I was up working at 3 a.m. for fun and for free. And if, you know, if that's the case, maybe we should actually start asking for some money as well. And so it literally just kind of grew into something we were doing anyway and passionate about. And it was kind of feeding the creative need and energy that had been stored up for so many years. And so we put a name and a label on it, and Zenbox Design was born.
Were you guys doing anything for income before that?
Not since we quit the jobs and ran away.
Cool. So when you branded it Zenbox Design and you turned those 3 a.m. nights having fun into actually generating income as well, how'd you decide to like price that? I mean, you're performing a service for people, but it's not a very typical service. So it's not really something I guess maybe you can easily benchmark. So how did you come about pricing it?
Still learning is probably the best answer.
You started really low because, you know, something was better than nothing. And and then I remember you did a lot of research of what was out there in the design and architecture world, and you stayed quite a bit lower than anything you found out there.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at undervaluing my services. But again, I promised Jen when we started this thing, when we actually put a label on it, that it wouldn't be about money. And the second we took a client for money, we'd shut the doors and run away. And I think that has been really key for, at least for me, because my old corporate brain can turn on really quickly. Mm-hmm. And even though we weren't asking for a lot of money to do it, and we're getting better, we keep raising the prices probably with every project to try and get to where it probably should be. But even in the beginning, as soon as we kind of started calling it a business, business. And, you know, it's exciting to actually make money doing something that you were already doing for free and loving. And so I ended up taking a lot of clients and I didn't know how to say no. And so it quickly became this thing that went full the opposite direction, where we had way too many clients and there was way too many hours spent and the stress started rising, you know, and it felt like work again.
Deadlines.
And so, you know, we saw our way through those clients and then literally kind of ran away and was like, wow, maybe this was a bad idea. We don't want to do this anymore. But then realized it was really more a matter of balance, you know, trying to find the right number and the right speed. And, you know, we've been really lucky to get some kind of amazing press that we never went after, and people seem to be attracted to or interested in what we do. And so we're in a very enviable spot of being able to tell most people no and only take, you know, the small few clients that really light us up.
Yeah. So I was heading the same direction you just hit on there was, I mean, you have a problem that a lot of people might want to have is as far as the clients, right? Too many clients, so to speak. Was the press that drove this large influx of clients, or was this all word of mouth stuff before the press started?
There was a lot before the press. A lot of it was word of mouth. Again, our home is still the very best marketer that we have because it is very visible. It's on a very high frequency bike and kind of walking, running route here in Portland. So there's a lot of eyes on it and a lot of people see that and are drawn to it. And then I think the press has been very good as well. And then I think it just is a lot of it's timing. You know, it's kind of a small niche that we started out in that very few people, you know, we had to learn the code inside and out to do ours. And then very few other people kind of know that portion of the code here in Portland that well. And I think we also just design differently than most people. You know, most architects or designers come at a very small home and design it in the same way that they, you know, would have designed a 3,000 square foot house and try to cram it all into a smaller space, as where we design more like sailboat design, where, you know, you're starting with a space that's almost impossible to live in and then working towards all the things that you need to fit into it.
Yeah, I noticed how functional everything was in your house. Do you call it a house or a garage at this point?
We actually call it the loft.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So everything in the loft is super functional. I mean, for those that want to see it, there's YouTube videos on it and you can visit their website as well. And we'll get to that. We'll make sure all that's in the show notes and stuff. We'll talk about it later. But it's very functional, from the table that swings out and I guess kind of turns into like a dining room table and probably a workstation, and the steps that slide out to get up to what I think might have been the bed. There was just a lot of really functional things that went into it. So is that kind of what you mean with the sailboat design?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, everything...
Dual use.
Everything has to have at least a primary use, if not multiple uses, to even be allowed in the front door. And, you know, most of the spaces that we design are, you know, 800 square feet and smaller, although we're beginning to see that grow a bit more now. But that's been true thus far. And so in most cases, you know, we start with a space and try to include almost no walls inside of those spaces, or as few as we can. So in the case of our loft, you know, there's walls around the bathroom, but then everything else is literally one kind of open space that can ebb and flow depending on the activities that are going on at that point in time.
So what does it look like when a potential client comes to you? Do they say, here's my floor plan, here's how much square footage I have, and you just kind of brainstorm from there? Or what does that process look like to kind of take someone from just approaching you as the first touch to taking it all the way through to the design? What can you walk us through that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little different with each one. You know, a lot of people are coming to us with a garage that they want to convert into either a rental property or in most cases, our clients tend to not be creating a rental property because, you know, that has a very tight budget, if you will, as where most of our clients, you know, seem to want to build their dream house. They just want to do it out back so that their original home can become the rental property. And then they're building their dream home that just happens to be smaller and free based upon the one out front in many cases. And so, you know, it all depends on what it is they're trying to convert or build from scratch. But in most cases, people just have, you know, there's a lot of limitations on what's allowed in these types of homes. And because they're very small, you know, usually people know roughly the square footage that they're looking for or what space is left on their property. And then it's a matter of trying to kind of, you know, roll out the ball of clay and turn it into you know, a functional sculpture that actually works, right?
So do you end your services with the actual design, or do you take it any further than that?
In most cases, we seem to play everything from the role of, you know, downsizing coach to designer to, I would say, architect, but we're not licensed, so clearly not that
design,
architectural design.
Interior
design, to some landscape design. We help them through the process of the city. We help them find a contractor. We basically do everything through them getting keys.
When they get stressed, you help them feel...
We play the role of counselor as well.
So do you guys both work on this together? Is it kind of like divided up? Like, Brian, you do these parts and Jen does these parts. How does that work?
So I do all the parts that are not creative. Brian freed up to design and ideate and things like that. And then, you know, all the invoicing and the taxes and the scheduling and the calendar and all of that kind of stuff. That comes easy for me because I learned a lot of those skills in my corporate world.
Yep.
But then I really like talking with the clients, learning. I like the story of why they want to build, or why they want to renovate, or why they want to, you know, have a beautiful space. So I like the meetings as well.
And I have no skills in any of those areas. So and it has all the hard things that allows this to actually work.
So are all these like Portland locals, or are you out having clients outside of the local area?
No, we've actually begun to say, originally, yes. It was Portland primarily because most everything was word of mouth and people that walked by.
Well, and you know the code.
And the code is,
yeah.
You know, and we're beginning in the last year or two to see it move just from this kind of small niche of, you know, accessory dwelling units, a second home on one property, to a lot of the people that are coming to us looking for just custom homes. As that begins to evolve into something that's not just about this thing that Portland allows, we're seeing it grow outside of Portland and kind of seeing it grow into something that is more about custom homes than it is about those accessory dwelling units as well.
And like some, you're starting to get also second homes, like a mountain cabin or a cabin on the river, things like that
too. From like a past client?
No, not yet.
Gotcha.
We've only been at this a couple of years. And so, and to be very clear, any building project is a pretty large undertaking. And so I think, you know, most people are still getting used to the, you know, paying off the loan and settling into the thing that they built.
Yep.
I would imagine it'd be quite a while before we'd see a second client, our client come back a second time, but that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
It's just easier when you already know somebody and the communication part's already figured out. So that would be great. But no, thus far, just new clients that are coming and asking for that type of thing, which is fun. I mean, it's obviously really fun and exciting to start thinking about those types of things, because it's easy for people to think about a vacation home being a very small quarters.
Yep.
And it's also really, I don't know, the needs and the activities and the things they imagine themselves doing in those spaces is also really fun as well, right?
Yeah. So if we go back to the van, which you guys took a van down to Central America, Mexico, you came back, you renovated the garage, you turned it into your little humble loft that you sometimes call home. But if we go back to the van again, you started doing something very similar with vans as well. Can you walk us through that? Like, how'd you make the transition from what you were doing with the small spaces to the van?
Well, we're still figuring that one out as well. And again, very similar story, completely by accident and completely unplanned. But we, you know, when we had the V-Dub, as we traveled and as we met other travelers, we got tons of requests to build out someone else's V-Dub. And, you know, I literally hand-built everything into that space and, you know, curved each piece of wood to match the curve in the van. And, you know, I had no idea how I would possibly rebuild someone else's other than having to start over and taking 2 years to do theirs. It was like it took 2 years to do ours. And so once we got back home, you know, we eventually had to go get the V-Dub, which is when we, you know, started renting out the garage as well as the house, oddly. And then once we got the V-Dub back, we kind of realized that while it was a great vehicle in Mexico and Central America, it wasn't a very great vehicle in the Pacific Northwest. You know, when it rains outside the van, it rains inside the van, and other common problems broke down every 3 days while we were gone.
There was
you know, it just
there were no windshield wipers.
But we did miss traveling in the van and living in the van. And, you know, we talked about doing that in even in an urban environment and, you know, having a larger space or something we could stand up and sounded amazing. And so we eventually ended up in a Sprinter, also accidentally, because, you know, we had no cash left to buy a used vehicle. And so our credit
union. Can you kind of illustrate, can you illustrate what a Sprinter is for those that may not know?
Yeah, a Sprinter van is one of the tall, it's basically a delivery van that you would see any normal delivery company driving around. And they've got a kind of a large slope on the front of the van. And, you know, it literally stands at like 6'3" inside the van. So it's a very tall van, and it's kind of quickly becoming the new, I don't want to say the new hippie van, but kind of it's replacing what the V-Dub did back in the day, which kind of, you know, the V-Dub was built as a utilitarian vehicle in Germany and then kind of slowly became this family camper van. And so the Sprinter seems to actually be moving in a very similar path. And for us, it was just, you know, it was much larger than the van we had been living in the past. It was new, so it probably wasn't going to break down every 3 days. I could stand upright. And it just became a nice kind of blank canvas for, you know, a new home on wheels.
We could be in it in the rain and in the snow. It had four-wheel drive, so we could take it everywhere.
And as I started to build the van or home on wheels, you know, just kept thinking about the requests that we had in the V-Dub. And we have, you know, even friends that were kind of moving in the same direction. So I thought, okay, I'll just build the interior in a way that everything can very easily kind of bolt in and then unbolt and take it back out. So if I ever had to use it as a template for someone else's van, I could do that. And, you know, at the time, you know, Zenbox, we were actually still making furniture as well as doing these architectural designs. And so, you know, if we ever needed an empty van in order to do a big installation or for some furniture pieces, we could just unbolt everything and take it back out. And then somewhere along the line, as we traveled again and kept meeting people of similar mindset, they kept offering a lot of money for us to build their vans. And we kept saying no, because that meant we would have to stop traveling and be in a shop.
And that's what I was going to ask was about. So when I'm looking at what you guys do, especially with the vans, and I don't want to cut you off, maybe you were heading this direction, but, you know, it seems like if you're building vans for someone, I could see you like designing and doing things like that when you're moving around. But if somebody like wants a van built, you know, that's not, you can't just hire, I don't think, your standard general contractor to retrofit your Sprinter van. So how does that work?
No, I mean, you're spot on. And that's why for a long time, we kept saying no. And then we actually had good friends come to us. And one of those friends happened to be a general contractor who was looking to make life changes on their own. And they thought we should kind of go into this together and say yes. And so the original premise was that, you know, he would build the vans and then we would continue doing what we were doing. You know, we'd basically, you know, use our van as a template, teach him what we had done, and then we would keep kind of, you know, marketing the business the way that we had been, which is simply talking about our lifestyle and showing people our van. And then, you know, that was an offer we couldn't refuse, right? I mean, it sounded so wonderful to be able to share that with other people, possibly make a little money on the side and basically still keep traveling. Sadly, somewhere along the lines that broke down and we ended up buying the business out from those friends. And once we did that, we found ourselves back in the shop for long days for the last few months. You know, and so, you know, I think like everything else, you know, nothing goes exactly according to plan, but we're figuring out as we go. And so we, you know, we did what we had to do in order to, you know, for us, it wasn't really so much saving business as it was, you know, fulfilling the commitments that we had already promised and making sure, you know, we kind of at the same time put the brand, you know, our brand personally, as well as kind of the Zenbox brand on it. Mm-hmm. And so it was important for us to make sure that, you know, if we delivered anything, that it was going to be a really awesome, high quality product. And so we went heads down to make sure that that was still going to happen. And a couple of weeks ago, just delivered a couple of vans and a couple of kits. The goal kind of going into this thing wasn't to build vans from scratch so much as it was to try and make a kit that anyone who wanted to buy a van and do kind of a DIY build could still have, you know, a product at the end that looked like a really professional, high quality build. You know, these days, if you want to go out and pay someone to build out a van for you, you can easily spend $200,000 or more.
Wow.
And so that's just the direction that things have gone. And so we, you know, we loved the process of building our van, but in talking to people, you know, the thing that always seems to come up again and again is that, well, I'm not a professional cabinet maker and I don't know how I would ever make it look like this. And so it just, you know, at some point it was like, well, we know how to do that. And so maybe there's a niche there that we can, you know, create this plug and play modular kit that literally anybody with a screwdriver can screw into their van, which means they can then, you know, spend as much time as they want to build sweat equity and, you know, find friends and family and very affordable other people to help do anything they don't know how to do.
Mm-hmm. So what about the actual completed van? So you said you delivered some vans. So are people buying vans, sending them to you, and you're doing this for them?
We did a few initial ones. Our business partners thought it was a great idea as a way to, you know, show off the kits and show what we had the ability to do, which I think ended up being very true. So we actually didn't wait for people to buy their vans and bring them to us because we didn't have the confidence at the time that that would happen. So we ended up buying a few vans with those partners and then building them out and then selling them, which we would never do again because that's a lot of skin in the game.
I was about to say, these vans aren't cheap. Like how much does one of these Sprinter vans run?
Yeah, these 4x4 Sprinter vans not only are hard to come by, but you know, for a brand new 4x4, you're probably looking at $65,000, depending on how it's outfitted.
Wow.
Just for the empty shell of a van.
Yeah. So you guys laid out some money for that. That's
a lot. A lot. And again, not really planned, and certainly no plan to hold on to them long term, thankfully. And so, you know, we looked at it as just the holding cost. You know, what's the loan payment every month as long as we have to have it? How fast can we get rid of it? You know, and obviously that all changed a little bit when we had to look into buying the business and figuring things out in that way. But, you know, the plan was obviously to finish them out as quickly as humanly possible, you know, so that we could get rid of the overhead.
Well, and the beauty of the plug and play cabinetry kit is that all we needed to do is go in and, you know, insulate and soundproof and, you know, figure out the systems, the electrical, the water, the propane, the heating. And then the cabinetry was already done. It was just a matter of like bolting that in. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty quick.
So with you guys loving to be on the road, and like you said, when we started, you like to ask yourself in the morning, like, are we happy here? Do we want to go somewhere else? And if the answer is yes, then you hit the road. Like I don't remember if it was before we started recording or after, but you said you're headed to Alaska, maybe tomorrow, I think.
Yeah.
How do you guys, like, can you talk a little bit about how you manage things when you're on the road? Because you're living out of a van, you're maybe in some remote areas. How are you managing a online business or a business that partly depends on being online? How are you managing this on the road?
Well, with ZenBox, it was always pretty easy, or it continues to be pretty easy, because the process of kind of architectural design has these very clear cut phases where, you know, because we love the personal engagement, we like to be in town, we kick things off with a client. So when we're having meetings with them and really going through all of their lifestyle and their needs, it's great to do all that in person. But then there's always that phase afterwards where you kind of retreat to the computer or to the office to design things for them before you get back together with them and kind of refine. And so, you know, we kind of hit a pace of ebb and flowing to and from Portland. And at least the last few years, you know, our dog is now 12 years old. And she's a large part of the reason we travel by van and locally rather than, you know, flying around the world. And so the fact that we're primarily still within the Northwest or up and down the West Coast makes it easy to kind of bounce in and out of Portland as that's required. In Zen Vans, I think we're still figuring that out. You know, we decided to go back into the shop and finish those vans, knowing that it was a 2 to 3 month push that was way more work and way faster and harsher deadlines than we would ever have chosen to give ourselves. If we knew that was going to be the way it was going to go, we never would have started the business. but we made the choice to do it, got to the end of that timeline, and now we're working hard to kind of back up and figure out what does make sense. Because if it has to be that type of pace, then we'll just shut the doors and walk away. It's not worth it. You know, in terms of our live work balance and the lifestyle that we've worked so hard to come up with, it's just easy. We'll just let it die. But we do believe that there is still a possibility for that, right? There's still a way we can deliver these kits. We can, you know, we've got a lot of great fabricators and friends that are fabricators in Portland that would allow us to, in the same way that with ZenBox, we can, you know, have them do a lot of custom work for clients while we're away. In this case, we can have them kind of working to keep creating portions of the kits while we're away so that we can, you know, hopefully take the company back to what we always envisioned it as being, which is something where we're not trying to sell anything. We're literally just out there living and talking about our life and our van. And if people decide they want one that's similar to it, then great.
What's been the biggest biggest challenge with living life on the road? Because I think this is something that a lot of people, including myself, like daydream about, right? Okay, just like selling everything, throwing everything into a van and just hitting the road and seeing where the concrete takes you. What's something that we may be missing that's a challenge with that type of lifestyle?
Well, that's a good question. Things have changed so much in our hearts over the last few years. Like, you know, we'll be out somewhere and seeing beautiful scenery and, you know, amongst nature and really getting a lot out of it. But it's our friend's birthday and we really wish that we were, you know, in Southern California celebrating their birthday. So we make a lot of choices based on the people that we love as well. I think the one thing that we've learned over time is just to keep listening to ourselves and not, you know, don't just set a goal and go after it, but set a goal, go after it. And then if your goal changes, divert. It's totally fine to do that. Just keep evolving and staying really present with what you want.
Did you guys have a different plan? So when you were driving south and you got to Central America, you came to that pivot point where it said, okay, do we head south more and go into South America? Or do we go back? Was this kind of what you're talking about here about listening to yourself and, okay, maybe what we thought we wanted to do, maybe we want to do something different now?
Yeah, absolutely. So we had a few different paths that we were really working through. One was to ship the vehicle to South America, and we figured it would be at least another year to travel through South America. To go back to a couple places that we really love, there was a place in El Salvador that stole our hearts. There was a place in Mexico that we could see ourselves, you know, settling for months or years or, you know, whatever. And then also the Pacific Northwest where, you know, where we have so much, so many loved ones. So we had all these different conversations.
No plan.
Yeah.
But lots of paths that we could go down. I mean, we actually at one point right before we came home, you know, when we came home, we actually thought that we were, you know, soaking people up because we had an offer on a tiny little piece of land in Mexico where we're like, okay, we could spend the rest of our money here. And over the next 5 years, we could turn it into something, you know, rentals or a hotel, or, you know, we could build something out of shipping containers, or, you know, we had this wild plan. And, you know, we loved it and we figured, of course, we'll figure it out. I don't know if it'll be successful, but we'll figure it out. But we wouldn't have any money to leave that place for the next 5 years. And so, you know, that was just another path that, or another road that we could have gone down. And I don't think any of them would be bad, but we're pretty happy with the way things have turned out and the paths that we've chosen as well. And even now, you know, we still have no idea. And it's part of that beauty, I guess, of that daily conversation about, you know, is this where we want to be? What do we want to be doing? I'm quite confident there's going to be a point in life where we're tired of living in a van. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, oddly, you say, what's the hardest thing? I mean, nothing seems hard about it to us. We, you know, the last few months we have like been in one place and it's a place that we love around people that we love, but we're literally just getting shifty and itchy to like hit the road and start traveling. You know, having that daily kind of new feedback loop and so we're stoked to get out and get on the road, but it's also not exactly easy living. I mean, you still have the problems that come with that. You know, every day you don't know where you're going to park or where you're going to stop or where you're going to eat, or, you know, we cook most of our meals, so that's easy. But, you know, there's still a lot of things that you have to figure out. You know, how are we going to get water? You know, things that if you're in a house, you just take for granted. When's my next shower? Where's that going to happen? And so there are a lot of those things. I assume eventually we'll want to have a foundation under our feet and a roof over our head again. But that's not happened yet. And so we're just going to keep going until we do. And, you know, as of recent, we've also started talking about, well, maybe the next phase is a boat instead of a van, or, you know, maybe we start sailing for a few years. We have no idea. You know, I mean, the thing that we absolutely suck at right now is planning. I mean, I don't think we usually can't tell you. The last few months have been obviously very different, but we usually can't tell you where we're going to be in a few days, much less a few weeks or months or years. And that works for us, but it's certainly not a skill set of ours to tell you what's about to come.
We're really good at the loose plan.
Loose plan.
Let's have a list.
So what's this is a rendition of a question that I sometimes ask here on the podcast. So what does a loose plan look like for your Zen Vans business over the next year?
Well, that's such a hard one. We were hoping to figure that out on our road trip to Alaska.
I mean, do you have anything where you're like, you know, if it works out, this is the direction we would like to take it?
Yeah. So we have a short-term loose plan. We sold all of the inventory that we invested in, and that made us feel really great. And people are really stoked about it. We're having tons of interest. So we are actually launching another round of our cabinetry kits. And we're already talking to people who are interested in buying those when they're done in the fall. And we're going to have local fabricators make those while we are traveling. And then I'm pretty sure that while we're, you know, amongst the nature in British Columbia and the Yukon and Alaska, that, you know, Bri's going to have some, you know, inspiration, some new designs. So I'm really excited to see what happens.
No pressure, Brian.
No pressure at all.
No pressure.
No, and it's, you know, much like Zenbox, we've been really fortunate in the fact that we are once again getting a lot of calls and emails from people that want it. And so if anything, the problem is that people already want other vans that we haven't gotten our hands on yet. And they want, you know, different models of this van. And, you know, there's plenty of things that we can dive into and keep doing. We just need the time to do it. And so it's, you know, it's always an interesting conversation when you answer the call and say, yes, that'd be awesome. But we are starving for a little time on the road. And so we're going to go do that. And so let's talk again in the fall, and hopefully that timeline fits. And obviously it won't for everyone, but hopefully in the fall, there's more people that are still moving into the same direction, right? And the best case scenario for us has been that, you know, again, we don't feel like we're outselling anything. We're literally just talking about these things that we love. I mean, we could literally talk about this all day because we feel so fortunate that, you know, not that we haven't worked our asses off for it, but that we've been able to create this lifestyle that we are implicitly exuberantly happy with. And so if the thing we do can also help others find that or move into that direction, and we happen to call that a business and make a little money on the side, I mean, that's a great place to be.
Absolutely. So where can people find out more about both of your guys' business, and how can they get in contact with you?
Well, the easiest way is online, I guess. So zenboxdesign.com, all one word, and then Zen Vans, which is Z-E-N-V-A-N-Z instead of an S.
Or Z.
Or Z, depending on where you're listening from. you know, .com. Both of those websites, we aren't terrific in most of the social media aspects, but we're pretty good on Instagram. So you can obviously go to Instagram and find us, find the businesses at Zenbox Design or at Zen Vans. And then if you're more interested in our lifestyle and kind of watching our travels, then at The Dangers with a Z or Z instead of an S.
I wish I had a cool last name like that.
Well, it's quite easy. You just make your own, and then you make it official, and you have a cool last name.
There we go. I knew there was a trick to it.
It's funny. Many years ago, our friends started calling us The Dangers, and we thought it was the weirdest thing ever.
Not
but,
dangerous.
But we didn't, we certainly weren't dangerous and aren't dangerous in any way. We just didn't really fit in. And so somehow that's what everyone started calling us. And so we, you know, we didn't really have a lot of connection to our last name. So we started kind of just going with it. And I can't even tell you, I mean, years ago was the last time anyone actually knew us by our last names. And so now if we try to not go by the dangers, people have no idea who we are.
That's amazing. That's awesome. Great. Well, thanks guys for spending your Thursday afternoon with me and with the listeners on the Hustle to Freedom podcast. It was great chatting with you guys again, because this is something I'm personally interested in and in considering doing. So it was fascinating talking with you guys and seeing how you've managed to live this life and build these two businesses while you do it. So it's fascinating. And thanks a ton, Brian and Jen, for taking some time out of your busy schedule to swing by and chat.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. And you as well as anyone out there, if there's questions we can help with, again, we're obviously passionate about this and love talking about it and happen to be completely transparent. So don't be afraid to ask.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. And we'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
I hope you all enjoyed that episode. Since recording this episode, I've been seriously looking into this van lifestyle. I mean, how amazing would it be to cruise down towards Central America for a year and just live wherever the hell you feel like it? Might sound like hell to some, but sounds like heaven to me. So, Freedom Chasers, if you like these episodes, be sure to go rate and review the podcast in iTunes or in the Apple Podcast app. It would mean a ton to me. Until next time, keep hustling.